On the latest episode of A New York Minute in History, we're joined by three guests: writer and official historian for Major League Baseball, John Thorne; president of the Historic Albany Foundation, Matt Mallett; and Rensselaer County and Troy City historian, Kathy Sheehan, for a conversation about the first recorded walk-off grand slam in Major League Baseball history.
From the Irish invasion of Canada to the early days of the movies, if you are interested in broadening your understanding of New York State history, then this is the podcast for you. I'm Susan Hughes, historian and archivist for the William G. Pomeroy Foundation, a proud sponsor of A New York Minute in History. The Pomeroy Foundation is a philanthropic organization based in Syracuse, New York. One of our main initiatives is to help people celebrate their community's history by providing grants for historic markers and plaques. Here in the Empire State and across the country, we support a diverse range of marker programs that include commemorating food history, civil rights, folklore, and sites on the National Register of Historic Places. As the nation's leading funder of historic markers, the Pomeroy Foundation has awarded over 1,800 grants since 2005. To learn more about the Foundation's grant programs, visit wgpfoundation.org. That's wgpfoundation.org.
Welcome to A New York Minute in History. I'm Devin Lander, the New York State historian.
And I'm Lauren Roberts, the historian for Saratoga County. Summer is heating up, and so is the pennant race. So for this month, we've decided to focus on baseball. And we're heading to a marker in Rensselaer County at 300 Broadway, located in the city of Rensselaer. And the text reads, "First Grand Slam hit on this site in 1881 by Roger Connor of National League Troy Trojans. National League became Major League Baseball 1903. William G. Pomeroy Foundation 2020. So what's more American than baseball? We often think of this sport as a national pastime. Many of us have childhood memories of playing this game, or being a baseball fan, or when our favorite team won the World Series, or maybe has never won the World Series, no matter how long we've been a fan. But we won't name names here. Now, because baseball is such a popular sport, and because New York has played such a big role in the history of baseball, back in October of 2019, we actually did a podcast related to baseball myths and the early game. And if you'd like to go back and remind yourselves or give yourselves a little bit of a refresher about the history of the game, I recommend going back and listening to that podcast. But moving forward, we're going to talk a little bit about the history of the Grand Slam and where it happened and how that was discovered.
Right. And as you noted, baseball has a long history, both in New York and nationally, but especially in New York, which has had some of the earliest teams in organized baseball before there was even professional baseball, as our previous episode tells everyone. So please go check that out. But really, we're talking about something that happened with a Troy baseball team, the Troy Trojans. So a lot of people who maybe live in the capital region or in upstate in general kind of may have a question of there was actually a professional baseball team in Troy. And yes, there was. There was a professional baseball team in many smaller cities around the Northeast, especially in the Midwest as the game expanded. We have to remember that during the 19th century, when this Grand Slam was hit in 1881, during this era, baseball players often had other jobs. They weren't the multimillionaires that we know today, signing these huge contracts and playing solely professional baseball. No, these were often factory workers, some other type of laborer, perhaps train, railroad workers. So that's why you started to see these teams popping up in these industrial areas, specifically in the Northeast. But Troy is one of only two upstate cities to have a professional major league team, the other being Buffalo. You know, many of the cities had minor league teams, Rochester, Albany, and onwards. But Troy and Buffalo were actual major league teams, and Worcester as well, which is the team that the Troy Trojans were playing that day. Another small kind of industrial city in Massachusetts had a professional baseball team. So there's a lot of interesting connections in this story about the first Grand Slam. And we have to also acknowledge that this was a walk-off Grand Slam. So not only was it the first Grand Slam, so bases loaded, home run, drives home all the bases, including the batter, Grand Slam, which it wasn't known as in those days. That term didn't even exist. So it was that, but it was the game winner, too. They were down by 3 runs, the Troy Trojans, when Roger Connor strode to the home plate and blasted the shot, which also was not actually hit out of the park. It was an in-the-park home run. So many great connections, great stories, as there always is in these type of legendary events in sports history specifically. But, you know, one of the real story here is where this took place and trying to figure out exactly which field this occurred on. And this was something that was not known until relatively recently. There was some erroneous reporting during the era suggesting that the game took place in Albany or Troy or places where it didn't actually take place. So kind of to get to the bottom of this and to really start to dig into this, we spoke with Rensselaer County historian Kathy Sheehan, who had a hand in not only helping with the research, but also obtaining the Pomeroy marker.
Well, it's interesting. So the Haymakers, and which then ultimately become the Troy Trojans in 1881, when we're coming up to this event that's marked on the Pomeroy Foundation marker, is they were supposed to play their games. Most of their games they played up in Lansingburg, up in north of Troy, on the flats now where Lansingburg High School plays. They're all still playing up there, which is great. Mm-hmm. There's plaques up there to all the Hall of Famers from Troy that were on those early teams. Mm-hmm. And you'd have 10,000 people coming to these games. Now, apparently there had been a big rainstorm, and it was really flat ground. Those who are familiar in the area would know that it's the area underneath Oakwood Cemetery, really flat, a lot of water runs off of there. So they decided to move this game that they were playing against Worcester, which was the other team in the National League. So it's the Troy Trojans now in September of 81, and actually September the 12th. Oh, no, it's actually September 11th, I think, was the actual game.
These ones say September 10th.
Okay. All right. So I'm off 2 days. So they move it down. And there were lots of other, you know, stadiums around. Mm-hmm. And they also played, for instance, just kind of coming down the river, what is now Starbuck Island,
right,
which it was named after the founder that was there. They used to play there as well. Ultimately, later on, they played up in Prospect Park and Troy. So on the east side. But then they would go down to basically the southern end of Rensselaer County, into what is now the city of Rensselaer. At that time, though, there were 3 villages. City of Rensselaer wasn't incorporated until 1897. Mm-hmm. And so this was a small, there's lots of weird little islands that have all been filled in now, but it was called Boniker Island. Right. And the area there was the village area, was known as East Albany. Of course, you literally are right, for those who wouldn't know, you're very near the train station. Mm-hmm. You probably could hit the Grand Slam and maybe hit the glass on the Amtrak station that's over there. So that's kind of generally what it is. I mean, yeah, if you come off the ramp, you'll find the Pomeroy Foundation marker. Yeah. That's right there.
Right.
So, but this was a big stadium. Yeah, this was a large stadium, almost as big as Yankee Stadium in New York.
So when we spoke to Kathy, she let us know that it was really Matt Mallett, the president of the Historic Albany Foundation, and himself a kind of an armchair historian and a baseball fan, and also a person that has a history program on Spectrum News. And he was brought the idea for this story himself, not knowing that the first Grand Slam was hit in the Capital Region. So he thought it would be a great little segment for his program on Spectrum. And he decided to look into it. And when he did, he realized that the location was wrong, that there was erroneous reporting at the time in 1881, a few days later or days later, saying that the game was played either in Albany or in Troy or somewhere where it actually wasn't. So what we do know is that the game was played in a park that was not normally the Troy Trojans' home park. For whatever reason, they couldn't use their park, so they actually moved this game. And it was Matt who really dug into the archive and found out the true answers.
We wanted to have that segment come out opening week of baseball, you know, just to really tie everything in.
Mm.
So he sent me the basic information and said, "This is all I got." I said, "Okay, great. You know, Riverside Park, mm-hmm. Albany, you know, 1881, Roger Connor, perfect. Should be open and shut case."
Mm-hmm.
Start going to the old maps of Albany, find Riverside Park, and immediately you're looking at the size of this park and you're like, there is no way a baseball game was ever played here. It was maybe 200 by 150 feet. I mean, this was a very small, narrow park. And I was like, someone would have hit a home run or a grand slam out of this thing way before 1881. So of course, then you got to start digging. If this isn't the spot, where is it?
Mm-hmm.
Start going through some old newspapers, find that there is another Riverside Park, but it's across the river in what would soon become Rensselaer. At the time, it was labeled East Albany, Bath. You know, it had a number of names. Mm-hmm. It had not incorporated yet as a city.
Mm-hmm.
There was another issue that we came across in that there were also two Van Rensselaer Islands. Mm-hmm. We knew it was, we quickly discovered it was on an island. There was a Van Rensselaer Island in Albany, and there was a Van Rensselaer Island in Rensselaer. Each island was a mile across from each other. No, you know, they were very close. The Van Rensselaer Island in Rensselaer also went by Bonnaker Island.
Mm-hmm.
The Van Rensselaer Island in Albany also went by Westerlo, which is the site of the Port of Albany now. So the record stated that it was at Riverside Park in Albany on Van Rensselaer Island. We're like, there were two separate locations in Albany, but they were the same location in Rensselaer.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to quickly figure out that it was actually in Rensselaer, not in Albany. Now, for me, not being a licensed historian or, you know, whatever,
right.
That was enough for me. So we did our segment. We had Tim Wiles, who at the time was the Gilderland Public Library, and previous to that, his knowledge had come from Cooperstown. So he was the Baseball Hall of Fame librarian as well. I think he's since long retired, not long retired, but he's since retired, and you know, every so often we'll kind of catch up on the social media.
Mm-hmm.
We included him, and you know, he went through all the facts, and it was like, yeah, this looks legit. So we put that out in 2017 to very little fanfare. It really didn't catch fire until another 2 years later in 2019, when Paul Grondahl with the Times Union wanted to do the story. So we covered the same story again, and local viral, I guess. Mm-hmm. I guess it went local viral. You know, a lot of people started talking about it after that. And within a couple days, I had an email from John Thorne. It was like, I had no idea who he was. But basically, you know, he told me I was incorrect. And I had written him back saying, you know, I presented, you know, some information, and he was like, none of this is good enough.
Mm.
Like, we need pictures. We'll need actual firsthand accounts from that day to prove that. And that's a tall order, especially for, you know, a sport that was not really huge at the time.
Right.
I mean, a Major League Baseball team in Troy.
Right.
You know, it's not,
right.
You don't really hear, I mean, we're struggling to keep, you know, baseball in general in the Albany area, let alone a major league team.
Right.
So that was a tall order. a good friend of mine, she's another historian, Maeve, she had she had said to me, I Google searched this guy. I was like, yeah? She's like, I am so sorry for you. She's like, do you have any idea who this man is? I said, no, I haven't done it yet. She's like, do not, under any circumstances, look up who he is, because you're going to be scared out of your mind. So, of course, I look it up. And yeah, she was right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was so intimidated. Like, this is, you know, the baseball historian. I mean, he was the guy that essentially proved that Abner Doubleday did not create baseball.
Right.
And I have to now go and prove him wrong? Like, no, no, thank you.
Now that we understand the story of the first Grand Slam a little bit better, I think maybe some of the listeners might not be familiar with the name Roger Connor. So in order to learn a little bit about who Roger Connor was and his pretty incredible baseball career, we spoke with the official historian of Major League Baseball, John Thorne.
First baseman, 6'3", unusually large for a Major League player of that time. Several of the Troy players, Tim Keefe, Mickey Welch, Buck Ewing, Roger Connor, began their careers with Troy and then moved on to the Giants and ultimately won plaques in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
So one of the interesting roles that John has, besides being a prolific author and obviously the official historian of Major League Baseball, which is probably the greatest job in the world, and he's a very busy individual, but one of the things that he does as historian for Major League Baseball is make sure that the records and the claims of these historical events are correct. And so he does have deep knowledge and access to the archives and the Hall of Fame and all of these other places. So John was the one who suggested that perhaps Matt was incorrect in his assumption that or his theory that the hit took place where it actually did. So there was some back and forth, and Matt was trying to come up with archival records, which is what John really needs to see as a historian. He needs to see those archival records, those maps, those primary sources, as does the Pomeroy Foundation. So very, very aligned in that. There needs to be primary sources that really tell us the truth about these events, and that's what Matt was looking for. And it was really a chance occurrence that led him to the final conclusion.
I had sent him a bunch of articles, maps, things like that, and none of it was from 1881.
Okay.
And a lot of it was from the 1890s. By this point, there was another baseball team playing there called the Bonnekers. The Bonneker family in Rensselaer, they were, I assume there's got to be some sort of family lineage still living in Rensselaer. But at the time, they were big in the ice company. So they had ice houses on Bonneker Island. And in the summertime, they would have a baseball team. And it worked out because this baseball field was very close to the train tracks. So a lot of teams at the time were railroad companies or railroad teams, and they would just travel the rails to get from field to field. So this was a pretty good spot for what they were doing in 1890, 1900. The Bonnekers eventually would have closed that field down, but the articles of the time was very specific as to where it was, at least in Rensselaer. They didn't really get down to, it was on the corner of Fifth. We really don't know. We're pretty sure that's actually where it was. It sat just south of Fifth Ave. But, you know, we went through old obituaries from the Bonnekers. I think it was Adam Bonneker's late son when he died. It stated that the baseball field was turned into a used car lot in 1930. So it was paved over. And by the 1970s, the car lot had ceased to exist. And By that point, they were getting ready to put the new Dunn Memorial Bridge in, and that's really where the on and the off ramps are. For that bridge is that entire park.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the location, but he again, like John needed day of information. So we had no pictures. However, about two or three weeks after, he was kind of like, if you don't have this, we're, you know, we're not changing anything. I was putting my shoes on, and I have a lithograph hanging in my living room, and it's an 1879 lithograph of the city of Albany. And it's not to scale, but it's a lovely piece of artwork. And I'm putting my shoes on, and I just happened to come eye level with the lower section of this lithograph. And clear as day, you can see a baseball field sitting on this little island at the very corner. I'm like, I've had this for years. I've never once noticed this before.
Wow.
So I find a much clearer shot, a digital scan through whether it was Library of Congress or whatever. I send this to him. I was like, hey, listen, I don't know if this is going to be any help, but I think this is the baseball field. And he was like, hey, hats off. That's it.
Wow.
You know, this fits an 1870s, 1880s baseball. You've got the grandstand there. We now know that there was a fence. Up until 1885, we didn't know if they even had a fence on this field. So now that we had that, it kind of gave me a little bit of extra steam. Went down to the New York State Library, went through a ton of microfiche, found a day of article. It was a day late. The game was on Saturday, so the newspaper did not print on Sunday. Now Sunday's kind of the big newspaper. They did not do it on Sunday, so it wasn't until Monday. And they describe how the game ended. They did not call it a grand slam. Yeah, it just says, after waiting a minute, he sent a long one over the center fielder's head and down to the south fence. So he didn't even hit it out.
Okay.
He had a legget.
Okay.
It wasn't inside the park. And he cleared the bases and touching the home plate himself before the ball.
Wow.
The cheers of the few who were present.
Since Roger Connor hit the very first grand slam, I think everyone would assume he's a great baseball player, that this team, the Troy Trojans, were probably really great. But that isn't the case, is it?
Well, unfortunately, the Detroit Trojans were not a great team at the time. They were competitive, but they were not competing for a pennant or anything or a championship, which is a little strange in retrospect because at the time, 1881, when this happened, the Troy Trojans actually had four future Hall of Fame players, including Roger Connor, who would go on to the Hall of Fame himself. But all of those players became much better known in the future of their careers. And that's really kind of the sad part about the Troy team itself. It didn't last much longer. I think it was 2 years after this hit happened, this grand slam happened. They actually folded. Some people think that they went on to become the New York Gothams, but they actually folded. And the New York Gothams were a separate team who signed Roger Connor and some of these other players and then would go on to become the New York Giants and then eventually the San Francisco Giants, where they still are. So some people erroneously believe that the Troy Trojans were the same franchise, but they're actually not. They just had some of the same players. So the game itself that this hit took place in, and I've read some of the contemporary newspaper articles, and really it's interesting, at least one of the articles does mention that Roger Connor had this hit that was a grand slam, although, again, didn't use the term grand slam, but that he won the game by driving in these runs. But they really talked more about how sloppy a game it was and how the fact that there was only 100 people watching it, which was one of the issues with the Troy team, that was hard for them to generate a big audience. So there were 12 total errors in this game, and Roger Connor himself, who played first base, had four of those, which is not a very good fielding day. So that took up most of the attention in these articles. But it is interesting that the pitcher that Roger hit this grand slam off of had a week earlier pitched the first perfect game.
There were errors galore, including by Roger Connor at first base. So the denouement was that Worcester scored one additional run in the ninth inning, so that when Troy came to bat, they were trailing by five. And when Roger Connor hit the grand slam home run that ended the game with two outs in the bottom of the ninth, Troy had scored one run before then on an error.
So that's the setup. And so bottom of the ninth, two outs, Roger Connor strolls up.
It is 7-4 at that point when Connor hits the home run, and they lead and win 8-7.
At that time, you know, I know the style of baseball was completely different, but why was it such a rarity at that time to see grand slams?
Well, first of all, to hit a home run with the bases loaded was a rarity. To hit a home run with the bases loaded that won the game in the ninth inning, that turned around what otherwise would have been a defeat, this did not occur again after Roger Connor's blast until Babe Ruth did it in 1925.
Although the Troy Trojans team from the 1880s didn't have a long life, the history of baseball is long and continues in this area. It ebbs and flows through the different periods of history. In Saratoga County, there were tons of baseball leagues, and we had several mills and factories here because of all the water power, and baseball was so important to all of these mill and factory workers. Everyone had a different team, and they would go back and forth playing each other. I'm reminded of a letter from World War II. One of the players that was on a team is writing to his brother who's over in Europe, and he says, We know that the war has really affected us here now in the town of Corinth because there's no longer enough men in our community to field baseball teams. So the league has stopped playing because so many of our men are over in Europe fighting the war. So at different times in our history here in the capital region, baseball has been important in different ways and then gone away and come back. And that's true today. We still see the minor leagues. We have the Troy City Valley Cats, the Amsterdam Mohawks. There are several teams, and it really feels like summer when these teams come back and start playing. And they've got pretty good attendance. Some of them have very good records, so that tradition of summertime baseball continues today.
Sports, in particular baseball, is the way we mark time. And there are mileposts or signposts in our own individual pasts, as well as in our collective past. So it seems to me that when we connect baseball to history, to geography, we're right there.
Thanks for listening to A New York Minute in History. This podcast is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio and the New York State Museum, with support from the William G. Pomeroy Foundation. Our producer is Aaron Shello Levine. A big thanks to John Thorne, Matt Mallett, and Kathy Sheehan for taking part.
If you enjoyed this month's episode, make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and share on social media. To learn more about our guests and the show, check us out at wamcpodcast.org. We're also on X and Instagram as @NYHistoryMinute.
I'm Devin Lander.
And I'm Lauren Roberts.
Until next time, Excelsior!